Okay, Randy is here. We can start now. Eldon never starts this early, huh? Okay. Is this thing on? Can you hear it? You hear it all right? Okay. It came down to today, either you were going to be stuck with me or with Carm. And we kind of did the rock, paper, scissors thing. And I'm not sure if I should say I won or lost yet. We'll see in about 45 minutes. So anyway, we're going to get started here. And we weren't here last week. We had, you know, her brother was in town, and so we went down, worshipped with the brethren in Kirkland with Daryl, her other brother Daryl, and so that we could all visit with them. They were supposed to come up the day before, and they didn't. Their car broke down, so that's why we were gone. So I've been told you're close to the end of lesson 24. Is that correct? If it's not, it's all Carm's fault. It might be a rough morning for Carm. So did we get down? How far down to lesson 24 did we get? Okay. You got to number 3. Okay. So before we get any further, does everybody have 25? Because we're going to get into 25 then if we're that far into 24. Does anybody need lesson 25? You need lesson 25? I don't see a lesson... lesson 26. So I'm assuming that Eldon, when he gets back, is going to be, and probably we won't get through all of lesson 25. I guess, I'm not sure. We'll see how it goes. I'm not on a particular schedule here. So, let's see, if I can, Randy, would you be willing to lead us in a quick prayer before we actually start, please? Go ahead.
Father in heaven, we are truly thankful that we're able to gather us all together here today to study your word. Thankful for the effort and time to work it out and be able to keep the plan. We're thankful for that. Anything that you provide for us.
Thank you. So, as probably most, if not all of you know, especially those of you that are connecting through Facebook, the reason why I'm up here today is because Eldon's brother, Don Given, passed away very suddenly. I think it was Wednesday, Thursday. Did any of you, other than obviously the immediate family, did any of you know Don Givens at all, other than the immediate family? I knew Don, however, not as much as I would have liked to. When I taught the book of Ecclesiastes a few years ago, he came out with a book called The Storms of Life. And I have it. I looked for it this morning briefly, and I don't know where it got put. But it's really a good book. And he describes in that book, at the beginning of that book, a near-death experience that he had because of his health issues at the time. So it's a good book. I would highly recommend that you pick it up and read it, because he goes through, not in an in-depth, you know, verse-by-verse type of study of Ecclesiastes, but obviously that kind of a situation had an impact on him, and so he wrote that book, and I used it a little bit when we went through the book of Ecclesiastes. So if you get a chance, read it. It's good. It's called The Storms of Life. So if I remember right, my first knowledge of Don, and this is going back quite a few years, but I think he preached alongside Lowell at Kirkland for some time, didn't he? And they said... Yeah, okay. And eventually, then from there, he moved on to Hawaii, right? And spent some time in Honolulu there. So anyway, I just wanted to say that because he was a good man, a very much a faithful disciple of Christ, and he's going to be missed. But if you do get a chance and want to, it's not a very thick book, not a very big book, but the book he wrote, it's a good book. I really enjoyed it. And the times that he came here and delivered some lessons. Yeah, Wilma. Yeah, it's a good book. Okay, so anyway, Eldon, of course, has gone back with other family members, I think with Karina, and they drove down there, down to Selma, California. I think Brian flew out yesterday, or last night or something. And Brian was going to take the class this morning, but I got a phone call real late at work Friday night, so I... as far as preparing to try and teach a class, I didn't get a whole lot of time. But we have these handy-dandy little worksheets here that Eldon's been providing, so we will stick to that. So, you guys did you get through the third question for thought down there? Or did you, is that the next one we're to go on? Okay. I was actually kind of curious, if we could back up just a little bit, what some of the discussion was on question two. Explain why men are not saved today like the thief on the cross was saved, for example, supposedly without baptism. What did you all talk about with regards to that or conclude, or did you even spend a lot of time at all on that? Refresh me, I wasn't here. What's that, Laverne and then Kelly?
My comment was that if he was still alive, so he could change it any way he wanted to. Someone else said something that was probably better than what I said. But if Jesus is right, and besides that, they were still under no law.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Kelly, you have your hand up? Go ahead. Well, yeah. Right. Right. No. Because then you really start getting into all the mechanics of it, and basically what Laverne said is absolutely goes along with what you said. At that moment in time, I think. Yeah, Jesus had forgiven sins before, hadn't he? And so he certainly, under the law, had that authority and power. Ted, and then... Okay. So then, in a broad sense, it was his faith that led him to that penitent heart that Jesus saw and was able to apply his grace in that way. Okay, great. So I guess we can move on to number three. Oh, Terry. I don't know. I wasn't here. You tell me. I don't know. I wasn't here. You tell me. What conclusion did you come to on that last week? I was not prepared to discuss going to the depths of paradise today. I was not prepared to go into the depths of the discussion on paradise today. Okay. Kind of sounds like it, but it wasn't. I don't think it was the Garden of Eden.
So, how did Jesus come back to heaven?
After he resurrected, right? I don't understand what you're getting at. What's your point? Okay. We're probably not going to get to that today. Because I backed up because I was curious about what you guys talked about last week, so we're not going to cover that today. What's that? Right. Okay. Go ahead. Right. Right. Well, that's kind of what the definition is. Yeah, I don't know. I know Paul in 2 Corinthians, the reference that you went to, I know he said there were things there that he was not, that no man is permitted to speak about. So we don't know from his description there what he saw. He wasn't allowed to present it. So I don't know exactly at this point. Laverne. Anybody else want to take a stab at it? What's that? When do you think you go to paradise? Now I'm asking you. I don't know. I haven't died. I couldn't tell you. Yeah. Let me just say this, because I'm not going to get into a study of paradise today. I was not prepared to do that. Let me just tell you this. I don't know all the questions to what happens after we die. And When I'm ready to go, whenever that is, then we'll know. You know, there's a song that we sang at Fred's memorial here. I think it's number 472 in the Red Book. And the song talks about, after all the things we deal with here, once we die, then we'll know everything. Now, paradise is, I think, a place that I would like to go to after I die, if Jesus was there. But I don't know that much about it. And I don't know that we're going to be able to decipher a whole lot of. All the time. Anywhere from watching a Husky game all the way up to some of the discussions we have here, I would love to sit down with my brother and who passed on 30 years ago. I don't even remember when it was now. Just ask him. Talk to him. I'd like to know, what's it like? Where are you? What are you doing? And there's just not a whole lot I know about it. I can't help you much there. I think it's a place I'd like to go. It sure sounds like it from if that's where we go afterwards. I don't know. Steve?
Well, maybe I'm thinking no.
Well, then I'm in good company, because that's what I am.
I don't really well in that way. You know, I just know that God's got plans and he's been so wonderful.
Yeah. And really, when you get down to it, that's probably the conclusion a lot of people, to some degree, have come to. I don't lose any sleep over it or anything, but I kind of Shirley, I've wondered the same thing. I've wanted to do that very thing, talk to somebody. I wonder what's it like. You know, when Don Givens passed away the other day, and this has happened to me an awful lot when particularly faithful men and women in the Lord's body pass on. You know what the first thought? I used to be a little envious. Just a little bit. But you know what the first thought that always comes to me? He made it. Wherever it is, he made it. That thief on the cross made it. By whatever means Jesus chose at the time to forgive, he made it. And like Steve said, I think that's a really wonderful thought. No matter what the age of if a young child is lost or someone that's been on the earth a very long time, you know, I'm fully convinced that my brother, he made it. Boy, I want to go there, not just to see him, but everybody that's made it. I want to make it. So it's good incentive. So your questions right now, I can't answer. I think it would be an interesting study. And, you know, you've kind of inspired me to try and take a closer look at that, if nothing else for myself. I think it would be a good study. Ted? Yeah, there is that possibility, I suppose. Okay, so now that we're caught up from last week, let's look at number three, and it's really not a question, it's an asking for an explanation. It says, explain this statement here, which is found in Luke 23, verse 31, and it's a statement that Jesus made. For if they do these things in the green tree, what shall be done in the dry? And that's a statement that was lifted out of that context there, so you have to go back and look at the context. I think that would help. But so what somebody in your mind as you study this, and how would you explain this? What explanation would you have? Is it really deep and complicated, or is it a really simple thing, or somewhere in between? Okay, daughter goes first. She got her hand up faster. Okay. That quote, that line there isn't a quote from the Old Testament, but just prior to saying that, I think he quoted from Hosea chapter 10, about verse 8. Did anybody go back and look at that? And if so, did that help you in determining maybe what you think he was talking about? Because all I can tell you is what I think he was talking about. Anybody else have an idea or thoughts, Kelly?
It's
all right.
For me, I think the context needs to be more in the direction of if they're willing to do this to an innocent man, when they themselves are not being persecuted, what will happen when things get really bad for everybody?
Okay. I was not exactly the same, but kind of thinking along the lines, those lines myself. Anybody else want to take a shot at? I'm looking for a verse here that I was thinking about earlier. I probably should have written it down. Okay. Laverne, you had your hand up and I missed you.
Where the scripture says, and I may just read this, it's when the tree is green.
I think it's two different ways of saying pretty much the same thing.
That's what I assume, but I don't know.
That settles it.
That's it.
Okay. I was thinking, first, I'm just going to tell you what I think, and then we can move on, or you can say you're full of baloney, whatever. You may say that anyway. I was kind of thinking along the same lines. I went back and I looked at Hosea chapter 10, verse 8, and what he's describing there is a punishment or a judgment, I think, at least partly on Israel. And so when you look at the Old Testament, particularly in Isaiah, Jesus is described as the root of Jesse, or the branch. In Luke chapter 3, John the Baptist talked about how the axe was laid at the root of the tree. The tree is ready to be cut down. In Matthew chapter 12, I'm just going to read just the part of the verse that was reminded me here. Jesus is talking about some things, the sign of Jonah. He's talking about the Queen of the South, which I think was probably the Sheba. I'm not sure. But in verse 43 of chapter 12, he says, you've seen all these things. And he said, behold, something greater than Solomon is here. In John chapter 1, says Jesus, the word came into his own people and his own people rejected him. And so I saw this, I'm looking at this perhaps as Jesus being the tree, being the Messiah, that root of Jesse, that branch that is here now in that day. So the tree is green. The root is developed and ripened. And that period of time when he's gone and no longer in the flesh here would be the dry period. And so along the same lines as Kelly was thinking, so that they're going to take the green tree and destroy this green tree, meaning me, the Messiah, what do you think is going to happen to all these branches out here after he's gone, when they're dry? When he's not there, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to, it's kind of almost a rhetorical question. They're going to destroy those branches as well when that tree is dry. That's kind of how it struck me. I don't know if that makes any sense, but anybody else have anything to add or not add or? So kind of similar, but I was looking at Jesus as the green tree and that persecution that goes on later. The tree is no longer there, been raised up, and now all the branches off of the root are now dry and doing the same thing. They're going to do the same thing. Okay. Used to have a 10-second rule. Get your hand up. Okay, then let's move on to number four. What did... there's a typo here, I think, in this one in number 5. I think that's supposed to be John 18:11, and in number 5, I think it's supposed to be John 19:7. You probably figured that out. What did Jesus mean in John 19:11 when he said, he that delivereth me unto you has greater sin? Now, this was an interesting question to me. What did your study reveal to you, or what did you conclude, or what did you thinking on this? What did that mean? I think that was found in John 19, wasn't it? Not 18. I think I looked at John 18 and went, what? So what did he mean? He that delivereth me unto you has greater sin. Who's he talking to there? He's talking to Pilate. And Pilate had just got done telling him, do you not speak to me? Do you not answer me? Don't you realize I have the authority to save your life or put you to death? Paraphrasing. And that's when Jesus says, what did he say right after that? You have no authority except it was given to you by my Father. Therefore, again paraphrasing, he that delivered me unto you has the greater sin. What did he mean? What do you think he meant? Anybody? Gail. She was just slightly faster this time.
Well, I think they looked at each other. Anyway, he's saying that all the men that brought him there, Pilate, the elders, the high priest, Judas, all of them. They didn't learn about him. They let the multitude persuade them.
Right. So they're guilty of a greater sin than Pilate? The people that brought him there are guilty of a greater sin than Pilate is. That's what Jesus said. Those that brought me to you, they have the greater sin, basically greater sin than you, Pilate. He did try and set him free. And one version, I don't remember which one it was now, said that he was afraid. I think Matthew's version said that he was afraid. He was afraid of Jesus. I think because he was an innocent man. Mo. Oh, wait. Kelly and then Mo. No, she says no. Go ahead.
Pilate is not a Jew.
Right.
He didn't know the background of the Jews. The fact that the Jews brought him there to Pilate, their sin was greater than his because they knew they had the prophets. They had the writings, and yet they still ignored it. They turned him over.
Right. So Pilate wasn't innocent, was he?
He wasn't innocent, no.
Right.
But his sin wasn't as great as theirs because...
Right. He was just a puppet in the whole thing.
He could have said...
The way I'm looking at this, the way my mind was thinking, that the Jews or those that brought Jesus to Pilate bear a much greater responsibility. That's kind of how it struck me. Okay. Ted?
Well, sin is sin. I think some things are very clear consequences in this life.
Right.
Sin is sin. What they did caused great consequences.
Okay. What's that? Motive? Good. I don't remember your first name. Mitch. Sorry.
Is Pilate's sin the decision that he made based on washing his hands or
I don't think that absolved him. I don't think that absolved him. Jesus says here, their sin is greater than yours. I think Jesus is seeing ahead and seeing what's going to happen and knows that. When you look at it just strictly from a legal standpoint, let's take out the faith and all that. When you look at this just strictly from a legal standpoint, Jesus was innocent. He should have been set free, right? Pilate bowed to the pressure of the Jews. Somebody mentioned that, right? He bowed to the pressure of the Jews. So he didn't initiate this. So the way I'm understanding it, the greater responsibility was on those people that should have recognized the Messiah, didn't, and pushed for his death. Went through the civil Roman government to push for his death. So if I understand this phrase correctly, no, Pilate sinned in delivering him over to their demands. The false. Heavily. He was influenced, and I think they stroked his ego a little bit, maybe a lot. Steve. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I looked up a few other verses. I don't know that are exactly like this, but I know there, and I'm trying to carefully find the words how to say this because I don't want to spark any issues or anything, but there are certain situations the Scripture talks about that you really don't want to be in, that you seem to be in a worse condition than there are other ones that are a lesser condition. And what I was thinking of was in 2 Peter chapter 2, when Peter writes that letter, particularly in chapter 2, he is dealing with false teachers. And he doesn't really hold back anything. He really hits them pretty hard on their attitude, where they come from, why they do what they do, and they just have a filthy heart. And then he goes on to say in about verse 17 of chapter 2, these guys come in, they lure the Christians, the faithful, into their sin, and he says, people that do that, that succumb to those false teachers, are in a worse state than when they have tasted the glory of Christ. They are in a worse, and then reject it and go back into the world. They're in a worse state than before they ever became believers. Right? That's in 2 Peter chapter 2. And then there's the next verse, 18 and 19, where he says, it's like a sow going back to the mud. So however you parse that out in your mind, there's certain situations, even that are worse than others. How God's going to deal with that, I don't know. But then he kind of says a similar thing in Hebrews chapter 6, where he's talking about the law, and then you go back into the law and the problems that are there with that, and then I would have to go over and look at it. But he talks about a similar thing. You don't want to go back into the law because now you've destroyed the sacrifice of Christ, first of all, but then you're going back into being a slave to that sin, whereas here you're not. And so it's a worse condition to be in. That's question four. Was anybody else had anything they wanted to, before we move on? Question five. For what crime had Jesus appeared before Pilate? What was his crime? For what crime had Jesus appeared before Pilate? Okay. My answer to that was none. Jesus didn't commit any crime. Did he? That he was accused of a lot of things, like you said. But he never committed any crime. And the only reason I figured that out, because he says, however, in the next part of the question, kind of gave it away a little bit. However, what did the mob reveal to Pilate as their reason for having condemned him? So when I read that, I went, well, okay, the answer to the first one, at least to me, is none. He didn't commit a crime. However, this is what he was accused of. This is why they thought he should be condemned. So the second part of the question, what did the mob reveal to Pilate as their reason for having condemned him? And he's referring here to John 19, not 18, John 19, about verse 7. What was the reason? Okay. Let's see. John 19, verse 7. Yes, but that's not what it says in verse 7, if that's what this whoever wrote this is looking for. Unless I didn't hear you right, Mo. So go ahead, are you there? Okay, is somebody there? I want to read John 19, verse 7. Go ahead, Carm.
The Jews answered him, we have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God.
So what did they say was the reason he needed to be condemned?
Huh?
Right. In this passage, he made him out to be a son of God, which to them, according to their law, would be blasphemy. Right? They threw all kinds of things at him. Right. Right. And they wanted Rome to carry it out. And so this verse that he refers to, all those things are true, but in this verse, it was that he claimed to be a son of God. That's what got him upset. And then they threw all kinds of things at him. Okay, that's the end of the questions. I got kind of a tickle a little bit about one of the things that this guy says, whoever wrote this in this lesson application. He says, the lesson to be learned here is grim. It becomes obvious to what means men will resort in order to protect their own interests and to destroy the influence of honest men who tell the truth. Jump to our day and age. That kind of sounds familiar. Is that kind of going on in society even now? Never forget that the religious leaders of Jesus' day were the very ones who put him through a kangaroo court and chose a murderer and insurrectionist above him for pardon. I got a kick out of that word kangaroo court. It's been a long time since I've heard that. And I guess that's a good way of putting it. I think there was at least three or four trials, and three of them were illegal under the old law. Anyway, that is lesson 24. Does anybody have anything else they want to add about anything on here on this lesson before we move on? We'll start lesson 25 and get a little ways. Kelly?
Well, this really doesn't have to do with anything, but someone just said that the two thieves were made a comment about the two thieves crucified with Jesus being Jews.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering, even though they were Jews and Gentiles, we don't have any idea.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So it's not like just because Jesus was a Jew, those must have been Jews.
I don't know. Okay, does everybody have lesson 25? I think I already asked that, but Mo, did you have 25? Do you need it?
I think
you need it. Need one too? Rich, I know you guys have got one. I tried to take yours last night.
No,
huh?
I have 25.
You have 25? You guys need it? I tried to take your copy last night. You guys need 25?
Thank you.
You're welcome. You guys got 25? Yeah. Okay, lesson 25 is the burial of Christ, specifically. And so those daily Bible readings are different pieces of the account that's recorded for us of Christ's burial, his being taken down from the cross and being prepared for burial and then being put into the tomb. So I'll just do similarly that Eldon usually does. And we'll just go through and start answering a couple or three of these questions. We've only got a couple of minutes left. this was actually a little interesting. This first question. Immediately after Jesus died, what happened in Jerusalem? And he gives a scripture reference in Matthew 27. What happened there? No, it's after that. What's that, Maybeth? Okay, the veil was torn in two. And darkness may have been a part of that. But the curtain of the veil was torn in two. And what else? Okay, the earth shook and the rocks split. And then what happened? Okay, there was a resurrection of the saints. Did that happen immediately after his death? There you go. That kind of, when I was reading that, I went, okay, boom, boom, boom. His question is, I said, wait a minute, this didn't happen until after he was resurrected. Exactly. That's my point. So they didn't immediately rise up out of the grave and go into the city as it's described until after his resurrection, right? Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting in Matthew's account that he puts that in there, that it was, let's see. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. So the graves were open, but I'm looking at this as they were kept from coming out of the grave until after his resurrection, then they rose and went into the city. I don't know. Maybe it's not that important. But I thought that was interesting that those things all took place. So the temple, the curtain was torn, the earth shook, and the rocks split, as it says. And then there was... Right. It does say that they did go into the city and appeared to many. Right? Okay. We'll do number two, and then we'll stop there. When the centurion observed these things, what did he conclude about Jesus? Ted? Okay. Yeah, he made the confession or the observation that this man was the Son of God. Is that what you're... I'm really kind of curious myself, and this is just my own curiosity. I'm just wondering what kind of a background that centurion had to witness these things and say this was... Actually, I think some versions say this was a Son of God, doesn't it? In one of the other... I was just curious, because it almost seems like out of the blue, he goes, oh, yeah, this must be a Son of God. I just wonder if there was any background to this. Maybe.
But, I mean, like he expressed, like, you know, the, when you hear him say, forgive them, they don't know what they do, and so on, et cetera.
It's possible you heard.
He probably touched him in some way.
Could be. This is kind of just speculation right here.
Oh, sure.
Kelly?
Well, I wonder how many deaths he had been in the century.
Yeah. He
had been in for a long time.
And there was something different about this one, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. Yep. That's kind of what I was thinking. There's something in his, maybe in his background that made him, you know. Okay. If there's, is there any, nope. Right. Right.
One man, I wish.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yes. All right. We're going to stop right there, and I'll let Eldon know that he needs to get a Lesson 26 up and ready.
Yeah.
Probably, I'm assuming. I don't know. I didn't know he was going to be gone the next Sunday, too. So, all right. Thank you very much.